Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, we're going to go from gemstones to actually the real gems in our life, and that, I think, is reflecting on the beautiful children that our legacy. Welcome to the show, Dr. Don Menken. How are you today, Don?
Hi there, Zara. Wonderful to be with you.
You bet. Let me introduce Dawn. She's a teacher, psychotherapist, and conflict facilitator. And whether that be because she's a parent as well, or actually she's made that into her profession, Dawn is a certified process worker and is one of the founding members of the Process Work Institutes that are based in Portland, Oregon, which is where we now have called it, Connecticut with her, and also Zurich, Switzerland. Her new book is Raising Parents, Raising Kids, Hands-On Wisdom for the Next Generation, and introduces truly a fresh approach to the joy and wonder of the world of parenting, going beyond those conventional how-to books to really an ultimate guide to nurturing the emotional, spiritual, and social lives of our children. Plus, here's the shift, parents' own personal growth and the challenges within that new life, career, relationship change that we acquire with the rest of the world when we become moms and dads. In other words, how parents are not only raising their children, but really also improving their own lives. So, Don, with that, thank you so very much for writing this book. Granted, my kids are now 16 and 19, but I think I did some of the stuff right based on what I read here. So affirmation is greatly appreciated at any point in time.
I hope everyone has the sense of doing something right. I think it's that sense of being wrong that I'm also trying to get away from. I'm very much interested in learning.
Yeah, exactly.
And that should be the emphasis.
And, you know, isn't that really the journey for us as parents? Whether we're first-time parents or five-time parents, each one of these little beings is different and does something different to and with us as well.
Yes, absolutely.
So I know the genesis of writing your book, I suspect, is an outgrowth of your working with families and with children. Tell us more of the story. What was behind the story of writing the book?
Well, I have been working for decades with families and children and parents, and I'm also very interested in working with schools and issues around bullying and diversity. Mm-hmm. But I never intended to write a parenting book, probably until I had my own son, which was 13 years ago, and I was just so inspired to be a parent. And being a parent took my interest in children to a much more intimate level, obviously. And from that, I just had so many things that I wanted to share, and my life and my practice and my parent things began to come together, and the book just sort of tumbled out of me with great ease, actually.
And
it was a lot of fun to write.
I bet. In fact, for authors that say that, you know that that's a precious zone to have fallen in or accelerated, that you could write it with ease and grace. Don's book, again, is called Raising Parents, Raising Children.
And Raising Kids.
Kids, Raising Kids. And I think that what caught my attention, of course, is this idea of raising parents. Because you say, well, who really does that? And and are we more, I can recall almost all young parents or at some point say, well, I'm never going to do that when I have kids. And then you find out that you do some of whatever came in your own bag of tricks from how you were raised. But society raises us, and there's all sorts of other influences. And I think one nice thing about your book is it's providing some real great insights to allow us to make choices.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you got that out of the book. And one of the things that I do write about is I'm very much interested not only in the raising of children, but in the raising of parents. And I think everyone has a task to raise a parent regardless of whether you have a child. And for me, what that means is that in this life, we all need some kind of inner contact to a parent or a parent figure or something inside of ourselves that guides us in life. And most of us, as you say, many of us say, I'm never going to do that when I'm a parent. and we find ourselves doing things to our children, but we don't always realize how we actually interact and the kind of inner dialogue that we have to ourselves. So many people are full of inner self-criticism and downing, marginalizing and disavowing our feeling life, body hatred, only valuing outer success, not going for our dreams. And these are parenting issues. And we don't realize that how we treat ourselves is also a parenting issue. And if you treat yourself well, you'll treat your kids better.
Oh, absolutely. And also you'll be able to weather those storms when you don't really, you feel like you kind of don't know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Or you're not, quote, in control, that if any of us can really be in control. But
that's right.
That it allows us still to feel confident enough to stand on that foundation, to take a deep breath and say, okay, now what really is at play here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, that word play, I know that's one thing you really talk about quite extensively about raising kids, is this whole role of play, fantasy, and dreams as being so vital.
Yes. Yeah, I think that is one way that kids also end up raising us, is that they reintroduce us. Young children reintroduce us to the joy and delight of play and fantasy and dreaming. They are so, so close to that world. And that's also why they're so attractive to many of us. And if we are outside of that world, we don't connect as well with them. But if we can join in with our own sense of play and fantasy, our relationship also is enriched. We feel closer to them. And indeed, they raise us too.
Well, I think what I would also say is that I can recall when our first child, our son Jake, was about 3 months old, that suddenly what shows up in the driveway is a 1932 Farmall Cub tractor. Now, mind you, we did live in the historic district in Farmington, Connecticut, but we had an acre and a land of land. So, like, Ted, what's with the tractor? And his comment was, well, Jake certainly has to have something to ride on in the Memorial Day parade that goes up and down Main Street every year. And so I thought, I think this is another one of those, you know, that more electric trains are sold to fathers who wish they'd had them when they were kids.
Oh,
so
that's cute.
So
yeah.
Ted could go back and play, but wouldn't you know it, that Jake's very first word was trata. Because he could hear that thing fire up, and that was what he and Dad did to play.
What a great story.
We all have them. I think that's another beautiful part about your book, is you were so nice to, and I don't know if you had, your son had to sign a release in the process to you, or you signed him, that you kind of snuck in your son's stories.
I write about his stories, but I also, out of respect for him, I'm not signing a release, but verbally asking him, well, his name is Theo, how do you feel about if I write about this? And he read different things that were about him, and he said, that's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I loved in the very beginning, near the beginning of the book, your comment about you had a moment where there might be some disciplinary conversation. And he said, just a minute, Mom. And he went to the room and got his chair. Tell us that story. It's priceless.
Yeah, it's all about kids will show you how to parent them. So one day, and he was out with a friend on our block, and he and his buddy ran up the street, and the two moms, actually, he must have been younger, 4 or 5 maybe. I can't remember of all these ages. It's written in the book. But he ran up the street with his buddy, and the other mom and I were calling for the boys, come back, stop, and they didn't. And that made us a little nervous. So we ran up, and we said goodbye to our friends, and I scooped him up, and I brought him inside. I said, Theo, we have to talk about this. And he said, okay, Mama. And he went into his room, and he brought out one of those small child chairs,
you bet.
And he placed it in the living room, and then he brought out a second one, and he placed that so they were facing each other, and he said, Mama, sit down. And I sat down, and he said, okay, now what do you want to talk about? And I told him, well, I get afraid and nervous if he runs up to the street. He's not looking at driveways of cars that might pull out rather quickly. And he has to pay attention when I say stop for danger. And he just looked at me and he said, yes, Mama, you're right. I'm going to listen more carefully. But the important thing was, for me, was he understood me, but the important thing was the way he set up a container for us to speak.
Absolutely.
And he
right.
left those two chairs for 2 days in the living room.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
2 days those chairs stayed in the living room. People would come in the house. He said, yes, those two chairs, we had a chat, my mom and I. And those were, that showed me that one way I could parent him was in good discussion.
And also, I think, as you said, Dawn, that giving him the freedom and the opportunity to set the context, to set the safe mm-hmm. environment that we want, how much we know, in fact, many of us who've had the joy of chauffeuring our children hither and non, that actually more great conversations come as a result of their not making eye contact with us and sitting safely in the back seat and
That's
asking
right.
their questions or making their comments. And how we don't white knuckle on the steering wheel, but we kind of release it and say, okay, this is part of it. But I think not in times do we realize that when your 16-year-old gets their license and you don't have car time anymore, then, oh my gosh, now I'm out of the loop.
Right, exactly, yeah. But, you know, that story also, it brings up another point, Zara, that I'm thinking that I'd like to emphasize. We spoke about learning right at the mm-hmm. start, that you and I are both parents who have valued learning. And I must say, this has been my guiding principle versus discipline. I'm not a big disciplinarian or punisher. In fact, I've probably hardly ever done it because my emphasis is on can we learn something and make something meaningful? Because learning teaches more about relationship and empathy, that no, I shouldn't be doing this because it hurts another person, because it's dangerous. It creates relationship, you see, whereas discipline just says, I'm wrong, I'm bad, and I'm punished.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And therefore, I also might not even agree with my parent, and then I will just think those things behind my parent's back. I won't agree with them, but I'll be sent up to my room, and I'll seethe up in my room. For me, that doesn't foster relationship and learning. And I don't want to say parents shouldn't discipline their children. Everyone should do what they need to do and what feels right for them. But for me, learning is the biggest guiding principle to create good, solid relationship between parents and kids and to support our children to be able to have good relationships outside of the family home.
Precisely. And that's exactly the point. It isn't just what's going on in your family unit, but what you're going to enable your children as they progress through life to be able to not just use the word cope with, but enjoy and take advantage of. Don, I mentioned in the introduction, of course, that you're a teacher, a psychotherapist, and there's this element of also conflict facilitator that you're involved in. And we might want to spend some time then how really important it is to enable our children to learn how to work out conflict in the earliest phases of their life.
Yes, that is so important. I love that you asked me about that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Because I feel that we raise not only children, but we raise global citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we equip our children to work out conflict? And conflict is a big thing. You know, when I teach conflict resolution seminars, I'll often ask the adults present, what was conflict like in the home where you grew up? Was conflict resolved fruitfully? And I tell you, it is rare that even one person raises their hand.
Yes, that's right.
Most of us grew up in homes where conflict was avoided, home life felt heavy, intense, with unspoken feelings. People were volatile, shouted each other down. People withdrew or withheld love. And so it's essential that in the home itself, people learn about working out conflict and being able to express a diversity of opinion. And my book is full of tips for kids and parents to work out conflict and, more importantly, to express disagreement. That is so crucial, and I frequently tell parents, if you want to prepare your kids in the world and you want them to be able to stand up to bullies and peer pressure, they need to be able to express a difference with you. They need to have the courage. You're their first authority, their first caretaker. If they can't talk to you, if they can't stand up to you, they will not be able to stand up outside of the home.
Yeah, very, very well said. We're speaking with Dr.
And you don't have to agree with it, by
You don't have
way.
To agree. That's right. This isn't about agreement.
Yeah.
Which those of us, again, it depends on, again, what those dinner time conversations were around the table. Did you take dad on or mom on or didn't you? You know, and then, of course, it plays out in the workforce, for example, when I've coached some individuals who, gentleman that within his team, he was always being the devil's advocate on everything. And it wasn't necessarily serving his best interest. But when I asked him the question once, oh, by the way, what was it like at the dinner table? And he talked about how he argued with his dad just for the sake of arguing. And then it dawned on me, sat there and he says, oh, I see I do it the same way today. I said, yep, that's exactly right. It follows us.
Great insight.
Yeah, well, we can't run from this stuff, right? You can try to hide, but you can't run.
One of the important tools when working with power and conflict is often the content of what people say is not important. Like this guy you just spoke about, it wasn't so important probably what he was saying. He was just playing devil's advocate, he said. So what is the devil's advocate? The devil's advocate, I think, in this case, I don't really know this man, but the power to be able to stand up to dad is a big thing.
You bet. That was huge.
So can you see also, particularly with our teenagers who are very much wanting to feel their own autonomy and independence, can you see the subtext of what they're saying and relate to that? So one of your teenagers might say something extremely provocative and you don't agree with that, but try listening not to the content, but to the background message, the unintended communication. For example, many teens saying something like this, for example, wow, that's a powerful viewpoint. Geez, wow, you can think out of the box. Amazing. Mm-hmm. How did you get that thought?
Or can you help me understand? Absolutely. It can, and plus it also keeps a dialogue stream open, doesn't it, Dawn?
Yes, absolutely.
That's right. We're speaking with Dr. Dawn Menken, and her book is called Raising Parents, Raising Kids, Hands-on Wisdom for the Next Generation. You can go to her site, Dawn Menken, MENKEN.com, to learn more about the book specifically. Dawn, of course, you mentioned that the B word there earlier, bullying. It's such an enormous topic, and it's one that I think frightens parents. It sets up decisions about school choices, about how do we control cell phones, so on and so forth. You know, there's a lot of more troubling waters to navigate, it appears, this day and age than it did before.
I mean, there's more avenues to bully, you know, for sure, with electronics, but I think bullying has always been around. My practice is full of people who've been hurt, and quite honestly, I very rarely talk to anyone who hasn't, you know, been hurt in some way from teasing, harassment, you know, or physical abusive behavior. And but I think we are talking about it more, and that's great.
The challenge, though, some parents, though, will turn around and say, listen, Joey, it's part of life. Get used to it. Buck it up. And I don't know. That is troubling to me.
Me too. The idea that people should be tough and that it's almost as a rite of passage. I am not in favor of that viewpoint. I understand strength and toughness is important in certain situations, of course. But I also feel that interacting around those tough situations are extremely important. And my book gives a lot of tips to kids who are bullied and parents how they could support their children. But one thing that's really important that parents don't think of enough, I think, is how their own home environments might contribute inadvertently to creating bullying behavior.
Can you give us an example?
Yes. For example, how do we as parents deal with difference? Now, many of us might say, oh, we're very open to diversity, but how do you really deal with it if you meet people who are different in your life? What is the vibe you give off? Are you fearful? Are you critical, mistrustful? That's very, very important, how you relate to difference and how much diversity and difference you also allow in your own children. They are very well different than you.
Which is, I think that's...
And the reason why I'm speaking about difference is because many targets of bullying are perceived as different.
Right, exactly.
And another thing that parents might think about is criticism. I talked earlier about inner criticism. Many of us feel totally tormented by inner criticism, and we're not even always aware of it. Mm-hmm. And we have, many of us have very critical households. Parents, oh, well, you know, that's not so good, or I'm not seeing the amazing thing you did, but I'm seeing where you didn't measure up quite.
Or what's worse is you compliment someone and then you do the yeah, but.
Right,
that
exactly.
was really great, but you know, you could have used blue instead of green. It would have been more vibrant. Now, really?
You got it. You got it. And that kind of criticism also creates kids who go out in the world and they're very critical and downing of others. So we shouldn't be surprised as parents if we cultivate those kinds of atmospheres that our children also become intolerant of others.
Yeah. And that, as you say, it's the unintended consequences many times. Don't even realize it because it might be delivered in a different way. You know, Dawn, another area, of course, that you covered so nicely in your book, Raising Parents, Raising Kids, has to do with, you know, really the diverse spiritual and religious traditions out there. I mean, boy, you want to talk about family lines that get drawn early. And whether it be geographically, proximity to the school, or their own religious practices or spiritual. Share some thoughts and perspectives on that and how that's played out in your practice in helping families.
Well, I find kids, especially young children, are innately spiritual or interested in the mystery and wonder of life. Their imaginative realm is very, very close to that sense of awe. Everything is awesome. A snowflake, finding a worm. They are amazed for hours just staring at colors. And so they are very close to what I call, and they ask the big questions in life. And it's very, sometimes we as parents, we don't notice our children saying the most amazingly profound things. And I often want to, I want to encourage parents that that's an opening of experiencing the delight of a children's mind. You know, so for example, with my own son, I remember when he was three, I mean, he began saying the most amazing things. We were on the Oregon coast one night sleeping, and he turned to me and he said, "The ocean is talking."
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I said, "What's the ocean saying?" And he said, "Dream. The sky is listening."
Beautiful.
That's a pretty profound thing. That's not just child gibberish talk.
Oh, I can remember my son, it may have been my daughter as well, who came down one morning and said, "Well, there were some pretty wild movies in my head last night."
Yeah.
You know, and you think, movie? And we said, "Movies in the head." And it was, "Oh, you were having a dream." And he said, "A dream? What's a dream?" "No, it was a movie in my head last night."
Yes, yes. Yes, children delight us with their view of the world, and they have their own ideas of what is birth and what is death.
Exactly.
Why is the sky blue? What are stars? And these are innately spiritual questions. Why are we here on Earth? Religion, spiritual viewpoints, philosophy, all address these deep questions. So I want to encourage parents to have fun and address them and engage on this level with their own children.
We've been speaking again here with Dr. Dawn Menken, her book, Raising Parents, Raising Kids. You know, the one thing, again, I'd mentioned in the introduction that you're very process-oriented and you take a process approach as you counsel young people, youth, families, and so on through this. But you also mentioned that parenting is a never-ending process. And I think the point being, Dawn, is that as parents, we are growing and changing while we're living the process of parenting children that are growing and changing. So there's all these moving dials, right, that are going at the same time.
Yes, yeah. I like how kids press us to grow as parents. We have to also develop and grow as parents.
And I think the thing that we get caught up for those of us that are blessed in more than one child is we think it gets easier with the second, third, or fourth one. Well, guess what? It gets different, right? Isn't that what you would say too?
Yes, you have a different person who you have to appreciate, and then of course you have the relationships between everybody. Absolutely. Yeah.
Dawn, we mentioned your background, of course, as being a teacher and a psychotherapist. Let me ask you this question is, how do you think you've changed by helping parents change to be the better?
Oh, my goodness. How have I changed?
I mean, you've obviously shared with us examples from Theo and how he's changed you. But you think across the variety of clients you've served and courses you've taught or speeches you've given and some of those aha moments for you deep to your soul about, and obviously it's reflected back, I think, in your work, this idea of wisdom for generations and how you've been impacted by this work.
Yeah, I have such a deep appreciation for parents and what we do. I really feel, you know, when you look at the world out there, well, so many parents think only of their nuclear family when they're parenting. See, I think of the world.
Oh, yeah.
When I am parenting my son, I'm parenting the world. When I am working with different parents and different children, I'm parenting the world. When I'm out about in the world, if I'm at my son's basketball practice, and there's a group of parents, and there are things happening, and conflicts, and all kinds of stuff, I get into the mix of stuff.
So that is profound. So you've got, the incubator. That's world work for you and impact.
Yes.
And, you know, the decision then to be a parent, that more of us, if we could actually read your book, Raising Parents, Raising Kids, perhaps at the point of making that decision and recognizing the responsibility we're taking on that's beyond the nuclear family. Dawn, thank you so very much. Dr. Dawn Menken, again, our listeners, you can visit Dawn Menken, MENKEN.com to learn more about her work and certainly her wonderful book. Thanks so much for sharing the stories today.
Thank you, Zara. It's been such a delight to be with you, and thank you for your wonderful questions. Truly inspiring.
Well, thank you. It makes me work harder on that role of being a mom, that's for sure. Take care. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.